die, Father, is nothing less. Ever since I was a child, I had the feeling of something missing me. I want to know why I'm here. Can any listener that? Become yourself. Then God and the devil will bless you. I want to learn. I want to understand. Because can you find the force to enable these two quite opposite lives to live together in yourself? At any moment, the wolf can devour the lamb. And you must learn what it means to become responsible. This is an exact place. And that is why you are here.
Doing well. Thank you for tuning in. This is Henrik Palmgren, and you are listening to Red Ice Radio. We provide you with interviews on fascinating, controversial, and important topics with authors, researchers, and thinkers on everything from cover-ups and conspiracies to philosophy and well-being, using fact, theory, and speculation to get closer to an answer. RedIceCreations.com and RedIceMembers.com is our websites. Today we have Anthony Gucciardi with us to talk about the Boston bombings, the gun control issue in the United States, and we address the major misconceptions of deaths by guns. And Anthony talks about the motive for disarming the population and the ultimate goal of diminishing all forms of independence. Welcome, Anthony. Thank you for coming on with us. You're doing great work on covering important issues right now, so it's a pleasure to have you with us. Thank you for coming on.
Hey, I really appreciate you having me on. Thanks a lot.
You bet. Natural Society is obviously one of your websites. Some of our listeners might know you from there. Now, more recently, you've started StoryLeak. Some great stuff has been coming through there lately. You've been doing some videos and some excellent work there. So I kind of want to focus on some of those issues as well here today, Anthony. But tell us why you wanted to start this website, StoryLeak, and what some of the main issues are that you cover there right now.
Exactly. So right now I have Natural Society, which is the third largest, depending on the stats you look at, alternative/natural health website in the world. But I was thinking, you know, one day it kind of hit me and it's gathered more intensity over time. So I created this new site and I thought it's great to have our health. And it's certainly a fundamental topic to talk about with the fluoride and everything like that that's really hitting us hard these days. But what can we do if we don't have our rights, our basic fundamental rights? What does our health really matter if our rights are being stripped away from us at lightning speed? So I tried putting some political stuff on Natural Society, but people weren't really receptive to it. And I think that's also something that gives me a unique perspective because I'm called a progressive when I write about stuff on Natural Society, but I'm called a right-wing extremist or, you know, libertarian on StoryLeak.
Right.
So I'm not on any side. I'm on the side of reality, and I decided that I want to start a site, StoryLeak, because it's time to talk about some of these issues like gun control, like the Boston bombings, like these civil liberties that are being taken away from us lightning fast. So that's basically what it came down to.
You know what, let's talk about Boston a little bit here first. This is a big topic, and of course we have a lot more to add to this, but you did some very interesting interviews, you know, pretty much right away with some of the people behind, I think, organizing the event. And basically, I just want to get kind of your assessment of it. A lot of people obviously have been analyzing this at this point, and you know, we know what's going on. And I think there's also a lot more to the story of what's covered in the alternative already in terms of how, you know, this is being. Well, I'll get that later, but I want to get your take on it first and what you thought out of the gates when this happened and you know, when you decided to jump into this one.
You know what, I'm glad you asked about the beginning of it, because everyone has lost sight about the Boston bombings, the very beginning, what was happening, and what we knew then, and the information that was coming out then, and I was very, very active in the beginning. I'm not as much active right now on the scene because there's just so much information. What they do is they just dump, the mainstream media just dumps all this conflicting info. It's so impossible to sort through it. But at the very beginning of all this, they were getting their stories straight, and the best thing I like to do is listen to the news at about 2 a.m. because that's when they don't have enough staff to filter through it. So what I was able to do is I was able to find this Alabama news story, and some others were able to find it too, and I reported on it initially, and I just said, hey, this guy says that there was a drill that morning. They were announcing it over the loudspeakers. This is a drill. There's a bomb drill going on. Keep calm. It's okay. Before the race at the athlete's tent. And this wasn't just some random guy. It was a well-respected coach from a university in Alabama. So I said, wow, I really got to interview this guy. So turns out, yeah, me and everybody else in the world, I went on Twitter to try and find this guy, and there was mainstream media and alternative news and everything. Everybody in the world was trying to tweet this guy and say, hey, please, we need to interview you. I'll pay you. You know, I'll give you so much money, because there was a controversy at that time, even in the comments of my article saying, this is fake. You know, he didn't say that. This is blah, 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 whatever. But he did say it. And I needed to prove it. So I actually spent a couple hours on Google trying to find this guy's phone number because I knew he was a coach at the university. So I ended up finding this old PDF from 2010. And it had his number for the mothers of certain girls that were at the school to call in if they had any questions or concerns. So I called him. I called him out of the blue completely. And I just... I'm the guy, the story's getting about 10, 15,000 shares right now. And, you know, I just want to talk to you. I won't pressure you. You're okay. And I hope your family's okay. He calls me back about 20 minutes later. Instead of MSNBC, ABC, NBC, you know, the alphabet news agencies and all the alternative people, I have no idea why. I really can't tell you. Maybe he's a fan. I have no idea. But he called me back and he gave me the interview. It was on his cell phone. It was really hard to get the audio up. I mean, I really had to fix the spiking of the audio because the phone was so bad. But he told me, yeah, there was a drill that morning. And not only that, they had people on the roofs. They had what looked to be snipers up there. They had bomb-sniffing dogs and squads, and it was crazy. And this guy said he's been to hundreds of marathons, and he's never seen anything like it, including military marathons. So that interview, I think, is almost at 100,000 on just my YouTube. What happened was, as soon as I put it up on YouTube, you know, everybody says, oh, well, that's going to be big, so they steal it from the YouTube, and I don't even care. That's fine. But they do that, and others have gotten hundreds of thousands more than my original YouTube video. So that's actually gotten so much exposure that it ignited this whole entire thing about the drill, and it added credence to it. I'm really happy that happened because it ended up to probably millions more questioning it than would have ever even thought about it.
You're right. What do you make of the whole operation seems to be handled in such a overtly obvious way? As more and more I look at it, I saw your interview you did with the nightly news over at InfoWars, and you guys were detailing, you know, the outlays of everyone who had the Punisher logo on their caps and the whole, you know, regalia, everything they had on, and the craft and everything else, and it's like it's so blatantly obvious, and I just scratch my head and thinking, isn't there another way they can do it if they do not want people to actually see this right away and follow this evidence? You see what I'm getting at, Anthony?
Well, you know, I think it's at the point where they don't even care anymore, where they think that people are so dumb that they can get away with anything. I mean, they had a drill that morning for a bomb, and as the coach who was there said, he's never been to any marathon where they had a drill for a bomb where there actually was a bomb that day. It's the only one he's had, there was a drill for a bomb, and it turns out there was a bomb.
Yeah.
And those guys, whether they're Kraft International or National Guard or whatever, it doesn't really matter. The security there is insane, and they were next to this weird guy with gray hair, and I get pictures sent to me every day that are stunning, literally, still to this day. Somebody, some genius out there finds this stuff that doesn't add up and all these inaccuracies, and they're sending me these photo analysis pieces. I mean, very eloquent, very detailed and complex. Many of them are actually either current or ex-detectives for various police forces and federal agencies around the globe. And they're telling me, you know, stuff doesn't add up. And I actually just spoke to a former Navy commander, current police chief, and even he said there's so many questions about what's going on there, and it seems so obvious to him that there's issues that he cannot even believe how blatant it is. I mean, he couldn't even believe from his political analytical stance on the whole subject, all of it, his detective work, just how blatant it is. And he thought that since it was so blatant, it couldn't be true. And I think that's a component, too. I mean, it's so obvious that even a fourth grader could see it. Literally, even if a five-year-old were to watch this, they would have questions. They would say, this doesn't add up. And I think that's part of why it's so simple to dismiss it in some ways, because it is so obvious. But at the same time, they've managed through the mainstream media to call everybody who's pointing out these blatant fallacies to be conspiracy theorists. And that's their label they use to dismiss anyone that dares to use logical thinking to ask tough questions.
Should we not assume at this point that from the media to the to government official agencies, etc., that they at this stage know that the alternative media is going to be all over the scenario like hawks? They're going to analyze everything, considering some of the stuff that's been coming out in the past in terms of, you know, the State Department has been warning about these conspiracy websites, and we know that they know, if you know what I mean. So, again, I have to go back to that point. If they know that, and if they, in some regard, make it so blatantly obvious, it's almost like they want a certain amount of us kind of looking at this with these set of eyes to kind of create a polarization. I mean, I have some ideas of why they might potentially want to do that. And this, of course, steps one step further than the initial just it's a false flag. It's also that they are going to use the effect of this as a polarizing issue itself. Do you see what I'm getting at, Anthony?
That's actually a really great point. And it kind of reminds me how right afterwards, after the Boston bombing, 2 hours after, CNN had this analyst on, you know, this moron, who said that it had to be a right-wing extremist because it was an amateur bomb. And there was other panelists who said basically the same thing. And it kind of reminds me, what you're saying is that they could really be separating those who believe the government and love the government, which is becoming a smaller and smaller percent, away from those who are questioning the government. I mean, we just had a poll recently that said, I believe it was 30% believe an armed resistance may be necessary against the government. So they're isolating, potentially, you bring up a good point, this demographic of individuals who are for that. And I think also, imagine if the Adam Kokesh March plays into this as well. I mean, if they're able to isolate these various demographics of the population from each other, with Obama going out and saying, you know, don't listen to anybody who says that there's corruption and tyranny in the government. In fact, his exact quote is, they'll warn that tyranny is always lurking just around the corner because they suggest that our brave and creative and unique experiment in self-rule is somehow just a sham in which we can't be trusted. he calls it a brave new government. So, I mean, obviously there's some some tie-ins with that. But I was saying that I think you are onto something, because they could be targeting this specific demographic and letting them come out with these claims. And some of them truly do make the movement look bad, but some of them are very legitimate, forcing more people to come to the side when they realize the information is there. But what if they were able to pin this demographic, this intellectual group, as something that should be feared and hated even more so than they are in the media, and then go ahead and use the Adam Kokesh March, for example, to go ahead and start a major issue and start provocation with perhaps an agent in there or even a cop shooting one of the protesters.
Yep.
I mean, it could go anywhere. It could go to the point where anyone questioning anything is therefore branded as that same demographic.
Well, this is what I'm seeing. There is because as you've pointed out eloquently here at this stage, this is not about reality or you know, seeing the evidence that's in front of your eyes. We're beyond that point right now. What we're dealing with as a, you know, as a counter force here, if you will, are people that are interested in, I believe, creating this schism, if you will, in society of you know, who is against us, and we need to remove these people or demonize them enough. It's almost like they want to have you out on the street with your guns in your hands. Because they want to, you know, have the incentive to be able to, crack down on you, if you know what I mean, or basically coax these people out.
I agree with you 100%, actually. I mean, that's perfectly said right there. They want an armed revolution. They kind of want it to go hot in a way, but they can't have it go hot until tensions are high enough between the population that believes in these things, that has the mind to question things, that has the sense of reality, versus the brainwashed droves who will become emotionally charged against them. Because remember, you bring up a good point, and I've realized this over time, and I'm attempting to utilize it on our side, but emotion is a bigger player than fact when it comes
for sure.
to changing minds.
Yeah. Always has been. Revolutionary movements know this. It's all about appealing to the emotions. It has nothing to do with rationality or thinking clear or straight. So they don't care about the masses who are already in a position of believing whatever the media and the government tells them. I don't think that they're so concerned with them. What they're concerned with are the people who are gaining in numbers, who are actually speaking up against us right now.
Yeah, exactly. And that number is increasing dramatically. I mean, did you see that recent Gallup poll which asked what do you think is at the forefront of the most important issues that this country faces today, and what do we need to do? And everyone was thinking, oh, everyone's going to say gun control because of Sandy Hook and everything.
Mm-hmm.
4% down from 6% said that gun control was the issue. Most said it was the economy. And then we also have that other poll that was from actually a biased polling agency, so I don't even know, you know, the accuracy of it really, but we found out that, you know, hundreds of millions of people believe in things like the New World Order and believe in other, you know, real issues. They mix in some crazy stuff there too to make people seem stupid who believe in these things. But a lot of people really do have a firm understanding of what's going on. And the only way to deal with that after a certain point, or in the beginning really, is to not debate them. And that's kind of what I've talked about before. I mean, if Obama really could, you know, squash the Benghazi issue in one, you know, foul sweep, then why doesn't he just go on the air and say, here's the facts? Or if he could, you know, talk about anything, why not go on the air and say, here's the facts, guys, or, you know, here's the facts, the Boston bombing conspiracy, I'm going to break it down right now. No, that's what we do. We break down the facts and the information. They just go ahead and say, don't listen to conspiracy theories. They seek to hurt your children. You know, it's for the children. It's all emotional rhetoric. And that's the hardest thing to fight. It's all deception because they don't have the moral ground to where they won't use emotional deception on the public. They don't have that moral ground as we do, where we cannot go past a certain level because of our morals. You know, we have to say the truth, always seek truth. But they don't have that same, it's not even a limitation. They don't have that same honesty because it's their downfall.
I think they know that through subversion and lies, it's, you know, they're going to be able to remold and reshape and reform society in accordance to, you know, to their dreams and their agenda, obviously. It's like when, you know, Piers Morgan, basically, and Alex Jones comes on there, and then afterwards Piers Morgan says, you know, that there are millions of these people out there, you know, who are, you know, on his side and, you know, subscribers to his YouTube channels and everything else. And this is on the Ghani show, of course. But, and this shows, like, also at the same time, the play, if you will, of everything that Alex talked about there before he, you know, went off in a raving madness kind of thing. It's like he's right. He's right in the numbers and everything. So he's appealing to those people who can realize that. But then on the other hand, it's as you've been talking about, Piers Morgan, you know, appeals to the emotions of the other crowd, if you will. And I don't know. It feels like it's very clever the way that the debates are being intensely polarized and these groups are getting more and more hardened and fierce. And it's almost like, again, I'm going back to that point, they want a huge conflict. They want a battle because this will be the perfect opportunity for them to actually really come in with a fierce, you know, control, if you know what I mean, Anthony.
No, you're right. And you bring up a good point there, too, because check this thought out as well. And most people might realize this who listen to the show because, you know, this is a great show and everybody that listens to it is at least somewhat aware, or at least are going to be now. But so on Piers Morgan, everyone thinks Piers Morgan's stupid, just like everyone thought George Bush was stupid, just like everyone thinks Obama's stupid. None of those people are stupid. They wouldn't be there if they're stupid. You know, they might be obviously misled or even a little bit insane. But the way that he invokes his guests, and it doesn't work on everybody, but I mean the Alex Jones debate, for example, he just would not respond to anything Alex was saying to the point where he knew that he could enrage him, unfortunately.
Yep.
You know, and Alex did present awesome statistics and everything like that, but Pierce just sits back and insults people. Like when he called the other guy, I believe it was Larry Pratt, he called them, you know, a moron, an idiot, or an evil man, or something horrible like that. And he expected Larry to start screaming at him, because it doesn't matter what Pierce Morgan does. Pierce Morgan's already done. You know what I mean? He's already done. It doesn't matter what Pierce Morgan says. If he can get his guest to look bad, that's what the media will highlight. For example, I mean, the media with Alex, they didn't say Pierce Morgan dodges questions on gun stats.
That was not the story on that, you know, on that one. Yeah.
I mean, no. They would say, you know, man becomes enraged, you know, whatever. They'll draw pictures of him and play the clips where he starts screaming. They'll never report Pierce Morgan dodges gun stats on, you know, reality or whatever. That's a fantasy land.
Yep.
So instead, he doesn't care about what he does. He just needs to enrage the guest. And that's pretty much all mainstream news. I mean, you've seen it time and time again where the guy just starts screaming and then they play that. That's how it works. And that's the whole system. But that's also media as a whole, isn't it?
Oh,
I mean,
sure.
That's how it works, because they'll highlight, for example, there was a bunch of people saying, it was something weird about the Boston bombings. Day one, people were saying that it was a holographic projection. And, you know, that's whether it's even a real person saying that, but someone was saying it's holographic projection. So then the media starts picking up on stuff like that instead of saying, hey, there's a drill this morning. And I did a press release. I sent it all out to the mainstream media that I had this exclusive interview that even they couldn't get, that they desperately wanted, with the guy that says there was a drill that morning. And no one cared, even though they wanted the interview, because they would never dare support anyone who's asking the real questions. They wanted to probably just say, you know, they wanted to get it out of the way and be like, oh, how did you feel when the bombs went off? You know, they wanted to take him. They wanted to take him and get rid of any real questions. They wanted to funnel it into, again, an emotional piece, and then ask him perhaps like, you know, do you think that those who have wild conspiracy theories about this are, you know, muddying the waters and insulting the families? That's how it always works.
Well, it's very interesting right now in the United States, everything that's going on, and it's an intense debate around the guns and whom is to, you know, take them away. In regards to Pierce Morgan, I mean, he's got to be a Fabian agent or something, a really clever provocateur, British agent determined to bring down America, but that's another story. I think I wanted to shift over to the 3D printers actually a little bit, and I know you covered that as well. It's a really, really interesting story, and I think the latest development of that is, you know, they print the guns in these 3D printers. It's basically a plastic kind of thing, I think. And the government came in and actually took the blueprint down from the website, right? What happened there?
Right. So there's this guy, I believe he's in Austin actually, and he creates 3D weapons. And what you can do is you can, if you have a 3D printer, they're somewhat expensive, you know, several hundred dollars, but I mean, soon they won't be that expensive. And you can download blueprints for anything. I mean, you can download a blueprint for like a hammer and stuff. And right now it's at a plastic level, pretty sturdy plastic level. But this guy actually created, through his company Defense Distributed, a 3D gun blueprint for a pistol, and it was called the Liberator. And it was on his website, and then the United States government comes in and says, hey, you're not allowed to put that online. That's open source firearm manufacturing. So they took it off his website, and they're all snide about it as if they did something. When in reality, when something's on the internet, you can't get rid of it. You can't just say, oh, it's illegal to be on the internet now. And they were saying, take it off the internet. It needs to come off the internet. It shows that even though we're struggling against some really strong intellectual forces inside of the government that are certainly, you know, light years ahead of us in technology and everything like that, that there are some really dumb people in government who think or are naive enough that they can get something off of the internet. Just on Defense Distributed alone, which is the original site where this guy posted it, 100,000 plus people downloaded it. Of that 100,000 plus people, they went ahead and put it on sites like Pirate Bay and stuff like that. And I can only imagine that millions downloaded it from that. And even if it was only 100,000, period, I mean, those are people that have it on their hard drive, their physical hard drive. They can put it on flash drives and stuff like that.
Torrents,
nothing short
whatever,
of it. Yeah, nothing short of EMP would wipe it out. So if the government really thinks they can get rid of it off the internet, you know, they're dreaming. And there's now tons of new 3D gun blueprints coming out. anonymously from these experts that are designing them. So soon, in a number of years, if 3D printers are available, and maybe they'll go the way of Stalin and ban all the 3D printers and, you know, stop everybody from having them. But
yep.
If they're available, I mean, really, makeshift firearms will be readily available to anybody.
What do you think about the perception, basically, that seems to be the, you know, when you look at official sources, is guns are safe in the hands of government, basically, but in anyone else's, it's the most dangerous thing ever. And on top of that, you have the question that, okay, well, now maniacs will be able to have access to it. They can just print it and run out and shoot anybody. And you know, so we're obviously at that point where, like, okay, so we have technology at our disposal, as we have always had in human civilization, that it can be used for something good or for something bad. But in terms of this case, should it be treated in anything different than from a knife or a fork or a fire or what have you, like a 3D printer? That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, well, you bring up another good point. I've said that a few times, but these are all really excellent points. You're definitely on target on all of this. But I think one of the most interesting questions to get into right off the bat, we can get into stats, but if we ask ourselves, we have actually been pushed to this understanding that guns are good for responsible citizens. Well, it's never even been like that. It's always been you keep everyone else in check through the use of firearms, such as, for example, down here, I just moved to Austin. I'm actually from Philadelphia, where you're not even allowed to own a weapon. You're not allowed to have a handgun or anything like that. But I can see the difference moving and being to cities like Chicago. I've been to Chicago for somewhat of a long period of time. Very horrible place. I've been to L.A. I've been to New York City. But I will tell you, I mean, Austin isn't a small town. It's relatively large. But the difference in how you're treated around here because you could be carrying a concealed firearm is astronomical. I mean, it is a whole new world. People will treat you with kindness. In Philadelphia, I was in front of a police station one time outside of downtown. And this is where we get into stories and emotion. I mean, this is what, you know, changes people versus the stats. I can talk about stats all day long, but, you know, something like this will change someone. And everyone has these types of stories. I used to park my car outside of the police station in Philadelphia downtown when I had to go downtown, which was very rarely because I would really, you know, stay away from that. But when I would park my car in front of the police station, I would assume that nothing bad would happen. Well, one time I was walking to my car, and there was this guy with a knife, and it was almost like a sword. I mean, it was about a foot long. And he came up to me, and he said, "I remember you from Vietnam." And, whoa, you know, this guy is nuts. This guy is certified crazy. And here we are outside of the police station, and there are police officers coming and going, walking out of the station, inside the station. They could clearly see what's happening. And the guy comes up to me with a knife, you know, visibly drawn, and tells me, he doesn't even want money. That's when you really should be afraid. And he tells me he knows me, he notices me from Vietnam, and he's going to kill me because I killed his brother. Jeez. So, yeah, that's when you know something's wrong. So I really quickly get into my car, and, you know, I call 911 because this guy's going to, you know, probably try to attack get in my window or something like that.
Sure.
And, you know, I'm in downtown. I can't just whip out my handgun, my Glock, or I'll be the one going to jail. So I call the police, and I tell them I'm right outside X station, you know, whatever the station number was. I read off the sign. And they say, okay, we'll send someone out. I said, well, okay, but, you know, can't you just send someone? I'm looking at an officer right now, and they say, okay, we'll send somebody out. We'll send somebody out. And, you know, it turns out no one came out. Literally right outside the police station. You hear stories of people who live 20 minutes away from the station, you know, getting there in an hour. But I'm right outside the police station.
Right.
Literally, I could just walk in there. But they just didn't send anybody out. But think about this also. We're talking about 3D printed weapons. And everyone's acting like it's doomsday if criminals get a hold of 3D mm-hmm. printed weapons.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is that if we compare the stats, the weapons that are most likely to be used are not things like rifles and shotguns, which is what everyone's desperately trying to prevent people from printing. You know, they're like, oh, they cannot possibly get a rifle or else it'll be doomsday. I mean, the overall firearms deaths are 9,146 per year, overall firearms. Compare that to things like diabetes, which is 69,000, or heart disease, 597,000, cancer deaths, 574,000. And these are deaths that are preventable. I mean, diabetes, 69,000 deaths, even suicide, 38,000, stroke deaths, 129,000. But I've asked people this, and you're a smart man, so you'd probably know, but I'd rather have you tell me what you think people said. I asked them, how many people do you think die per year from rifles? What do you think they said?
Jeez. Yeah, what did I say? 10,000?
Yeah. Well, some said – that was actually a good guess. That's what I would think they said. We had people say 1 million. We had people say 100,000. I would say the average person said 100,000. So they believe that 100,000 – some one of them said 1 million – people die – from rifles each year.
It's incredibly high. How can I guess that high? It's unbelievable.
Well, you know, you're not from the United States, I would imagine.
No.
So you probably have a different perspective on, you know, how these things really work. But I'm sure you've seen the Mark Dice videos. He goes up to people and they sign away the First Amendment and stuff like that. But I kind of did the same thing, but I asked them how many people die per year from rifles. But again, 9,000 from all firearms die per year. But only 348 people die per year from rifles. So less than 1,000, less than 500. Yet why do these people think that 100,000 or 1 million die each year? Well, it's the media, because they make it seem like there's these mass shootings. And the people we asked, they cited Sandy Hook almost every time, as if, you know, there was thousands of people dying in Sandy Hook. Obviously, they didn't even think that, but they thought that there were so many massacres, so many school shootings, so many everything, mass shootings all over the place, that it was hundreds of thousands of people dying in many cases. But, of course, you have a better chance of dying in your bathtub than being shot by a rifle.
Yeah.
And more importantly, knives and cutting tools accounted for 1,825 deaths in 2009, which is 1,400 more. Clubs and hammers killed 263 more people than rifles. Hands, fists, and feet killed 455 more people than rifles. So if a criminal has a hand or a foot, he has a better chance of killing you than with a rifle. So to say that we should be afraid of the 3D guns, as the government is saying, well, we should really be afraid of anybody that is delusional and crazy enough to kill another human instead. How about that? You know, how about that societal aspect? Because as long as they have limbs, as long as they're not Angelina Jolie cutting off their limbs, then they will have the ability to harm you.
Yeah, that's right. Well, that's why they're getting to it. They will control the mind eventually. They will be able to control that with medication and electronic implants, you know. So we will all be safe at the end. So don't worry about it. No, it's unbelievable. You know, it's really unbelievable. Wow, I didn't know that. The stats are incredible in that regard. But we're back at that point again, Anthony, that, well, you know, we're really talking about emotional impacts, not about facts or statistics. And, you know, forget that. It's all about the, you know, Piers Morgan said it. If you're, you know, for guns, you're for the killing of children, you know, and for Sandy Hook and all these things, you know, then that's it. The debate ends there, you know.
You know, I want to add this too. If you're against guns, you're for the killing of citizens, because 162,000 people, according to the survey, which was published in a prestigious journal, 162,000 people are saved from certain death situations by using a legal firearm from criminals. So that's 152,854 more people saved by legal firearms than killed by criminals each year.
Yeah.
So 150,000 people, if we're using these stats, which, you know, would be the case, 150,000 more people would die per year from certain death situations. Over 980,000 faced potential death situations. So around 1 million people, 989,883 face potentially life-threatening scenarios. So if they didn't have legal firearms, it's very possible they would have died. So the million toll from rifles actually is applicable to the toll of self-defense cases that are being preventing crime each year.
Yeah. So what is really going on here? I mean, should we believe that the government employs people that can't do the math, and that's not a bad theory, of course, but you know, the numbers that they supply to people like Dianne Feinstein is maybe not numbers at all, but strictly emotional, and she's working adamantly and vehemently to just take away the guns from the Americans. So what is the agenda there? Why do they want to work towards this, do you think?
She's not stupid. She can do math. It's 100% people control. When you disarm the population, not only, yes, you can go in and do anything you want to them, just as we've seen throughout history with virtually every major civilization that turns into a tyrannical government, you can go in and do anything. You can enact any legislation because you have absolutely no fear of anything happening. You can go in and do home searches. You can do martial law. You can do what they did in Boston and go into private homes and hold the owners up at gunpoint and have no fear whatsoever that they will shoot back. But more importantly, perhaps, is that you take away the inherent instinct of human beings and creatures that have a right and instinct to self-defense. So, for example, if you were to go up to any dog and just, if you weren't its owner, this would be sad, but if you were to do it and just smack it across the face and you just don't start kicking it, it would at least show its teeth. Or if you were to go up to a wasp and just start smacking it, you know, it would come over and it would sting you. Any type of animal would do this. A bear? Well, a human would do the same thing, unless it was taught not to do so. And, of course, we're more civilized than human. I mean, than creatures, to some extent, you know. We have morals and laws and everything like that, and those are great. But we've become so shot down to the point where our very instincts of questioning things and defending ourselves are being taken away one by one, to the point where our inherent instincts are being overcome at a base level. And I think that's something that most people don't think about. They think about that, yes, they could come in and it could be complete tyranny if they take away the weapons. And that's very true 100%. But also they're debasing us. Our right and instinct of self-defense, of going up and saying, hey, you can't do that. If they can get rid of that, they can take away our humanity even that much further, which allows for further control. Because once you take away that inherent desire in a human, it can you've seen the brainwashing of individuals, and it works. That you can brainwash someone. I mean, look at the people who have slaves in their basements for 15 years, and they have Stockholm syndrome, and they start to enjoy it. It's kind of that type of scenario. If you take away the basic rights, basic instincts of a human, you can debase it down to the level of a slave.
Yeah, that's right. Well, that's really where we're getting at here. It's the basic destruction of all the things that we've been considered to be human. And I think partially also what has been termed to be, you know, so-called civilizations with laws and everything else also, you know, help to destroy these natural instincts in human beings. So we're so reliant on a system of a bureaucracy, basically paperwork and everything else, to tell us how to act and what to do and everything else. So it's really actually a disconnection from the natural forces that have caused us to move into this area. It's really like, again, we go back to that movie THX 1138, where, you know, the whole society is you know, basically they're building robots that are there to protect them, the police officer robots, basically. And that's kind of where we're heading. I mean, it's a sci-fi movie, and it's way ahead in the future, but I think really already, Anthony, the components for that, the kind of the background, if you will, of where that is heading in the further longer extent is actually really already in place, I think. Not maybe for people like you and me and people who are questioning these things, of course, but overall, it's like, I don't understand how we could be so devoid from these natural instincts and be so far removed from them, and that the majority of people have allowed themselves to be put into that. It's a very strange situation, isn't it?
No, it absolutely is. And it also goes into kind of what you were saying, this idea that not only do we need government, but we need everything that it provides to us, or we won't be able to live the quality of life that we deem to be necessary. We see this in small ways with welfare and food stamps and other forms of government assistance. I mean, I know people in the entrepreneurial field right now, and that's something I've always been passionate about, always, and I've used it now for alternative news and spreading the truth. But I know people that will sit there, and they'll receive checks from the government every single month, and they will really not work. But they'll have government checks come in for their business, and they use some type of bogus reason, like providing laptops to inner city kids. And we're talking about millions of dollars. I mean, this is how the system works now. It's not only fueling those who don't want to work and just sit and receive welfare checks, but it's also fueling entrepreneurs who otherwise would actually be out there doing real things for the community. But instead, the government is fueling the small businesses that are ceasing to exist now. So they're taking over every single aspect of it. And as a small business owner yourself, and you know me, we look at the charts. The small businesses in the United States, at least, I don't know how it looks in your country, but I mean, the small businesses here are diminishing rapidly.
We don't even have any small businesses anymore in my country. It's gone. It's, oh God, don't get me started on Sweden and Scandinavia. It's a nightmare. Let me tell you that.
It's something that people don't hear about because almost nobody has a small business. But people don't understand. If we are wiped out from all these taxes, I paid 43% tax on one of my companies this 2012.
Yeah.
There was no way around it. We have a great accountant. There's just no way around it with all these taxes. And it's sad, but guess what? The only option for some of these things is just to fire everybody. I mean, that's what
great.
The accountant told me to do. I can't do it. You know, we need the help. But he said, you know, one of the things that a lot of my clients are doing right now is they're just removing pretty much all of their employees and just, you know, getting overseas work from independent contractors. I mean, I cannot do that. But the fact of the matter is that's what it's coming down to. It's complete globalism in every capacity because that's what it ultimately comes down to doing is hiring Indian workers to outsource your stuff for way cheaper. And then you don't have to pay the taxes as well because you just, you know, hire them as independent contractors on the side and stuff like that. But it's just an obliteration of any independence whatsoever.
Yeah. Yep, and that's what they want. I think ultimately, I go back to that all the time, I think from the point of view of government, they're not in the position they are at this stage. They're not afraid of getting fired, if you know what I mean. There's like, for them never to exist is not even a realization in their worldview right now. I think that they think, well, at the end of the day, we print the money. We can be infinitely in debt, basically. It doesn't matter. As long as people are dependent on us for our survival, there's a great scene in V for Vendetta when one of the main, head of the fascist regime there, basically, you know, it tells them that we need to show people the reason why they need us. And even if that, and now we go full loop, of course, and back to things like Boston again, where the government, of course, does terrorism on itself, and that will be ultimately the incentive for the people to go to the government to say, help us, you know, you have to do something. We have all these, you know, terrorists running around. And so we're back to that point that it's ultimately about dependency, really, no matter how bad things are. But ultimately, they don't want to have individual people who are independent. They can take care of themselves. They can do their own. And this is basically one of the, you know, the prime targets, I think, that they have right now, people who can mend for themselves and take care for themselves. That's the boogeyman right now, right?
No, exactly. And think about this, too. If you don't have any morals, you don't have any form of conscience. In fact, your dogma is to do evil. Then you can use some of the most absurd tactics ever. Because why not? You know, if you don't care about killing individuals, as we know that they don't, because, I mean, look at Obama, drone striking children, and then he goes on television and sheds a little tear for the Benghazi victims when he does not say anything about his authorized drone strikes that are killing literal babies, women, and innocent people, hundreds of innocent people. Even one of the employees of Google came out and used his web skills to create kind of like a chart of all those who had been killed by
That's
the drone
right.
strikes.
Yeah, I saw that.
And that was an excellent job he did there. He's not like a major guy at Google, but he did that, and it went a little bit viral. But the fact of the matter is these people don't care. And we talk about, for example, diminishing all forms of independent thought and action. Well, it's pretty easy, actually. I mean, if people think about, you know, how could they possibly do that? They would never do that to me. Well, actually, they would, because if you think about the police and military who have it said on record, I will not take weapons from citizens, right? And in a lot of polls that we conduct and find that most of them would not do that, right? Well, I guarantee you that if tomorrow they had a suitcase-type nuke go off in Los Angeles and played it on loop 24/7 around the clock on all the mainstream news stations, and then had some guy come out in full camo and has a Don't Tread on Me shirt and Infowars.com on his, you know, a bumper sticker on his car or something like that, and said, yeah, I did that. I hate America. I'm a sovereign citizen. And, you know, this is the beginning of the revolution, right?
Yeah.
Well, then everybody in this demographic, you and me, everybody is now the enemy. And those same people who said, I would never take guns from a citizen, they're burning hot with rage at this guy.
Yeah.
And guess what? All of us are under the sights too. And he's going to, you know, I'm not saying this is going to happen, but imagine if it did, and it could happen quite easily because they have no morals. But if this guy came out and said, you know, it turns out the media says, oh, he's a fan of the NRA. He visited storyleak.com and listens to Red Ice Creations, all this stuff. Then it would be so simple to get the public to not only hate all of us, but to get the military and the police to target us. Even on their own, they wouldn't even need orders, which is the craziest thing. It's just like in Germany, during Nazi Germany, the German soldiers, they would actually kill a lot of the innocents without orders. They would just kill, not even just the Jews, they would just go, you know, don't even talk about that, but they would just go and kill random people because they enjoyed the murder. They would just go and shoot kids or whatever just because they've been so used to it. So we could see something similar like that, where that the police don't even need orders to go ahead and target those individuals that are related to the boogeyman. They would just do it themselves.
Well, it's kind of what we see with Tamerlan, the older brother there after Boston, too. Allegedly, he, you know, didn't have a weapon. He was hiding in a boat, you know. We don't know the story at this stage, but what we know is that he got, you know, shot with quite a few bullets. And that's basically the bottom line. I mean, what do you have, the word of a policeman against someone who's dead? And at the end of the day, they can just say, well, he had a weapon, or they plant it, or maybe they don't even show it, or he got lost, or whatever. This could happen all the time. And the fact is, the world we're living in is complete anarchy, if you will, from the point of view of those who are ruling the law system. They're doing exactly completely what they want to do, and still people are walking around with the perception that it's orderly and civilized and things are going well, you know, but it's, once you begin to kind of look into, peer behind the veil a little bit of these things, you realize that it's complete mayhem, and it's still just the rule of the few, the thugs, basically. That's what we're looking at, Anthony.
Yeah, and don't forget also, and no one's brought up this point. I've talked about this before, but it just seems like the mainstream media might even want to slightly mention this. The 19-year-old suspect to which they locked down the city for, what was it, 18 hours, looking all over the place. During that time, he was on Twitter, tweeting to his friends. And, you know, I can't say I'm 100% expert in this, but I do know actual experts in this. They should have been able to trace either the IP address or at least the Wi-Fi connection that he was on while posting to Twitter, since they've had his Twitter account for, you know, who knows how long.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out he was in his dorm room, I guess, and then also running from the agents and SWAT members who were dressed like military with their war-style vehicles on the street. But he was on Twitter talking to his friends. And it seems to me that an 18-hour manhunt all over the darn city and even suburbs was highly, highly unnecessary when they could have pinpointed his location maybe within 1 mile, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, it wouldn't have been that hard. It just doesn't make – it just proves that they're just demonstrating their power in a beta test.
That's right. Well, exactly. That's a good point. It's staged theatrics, basically, and it's for the manhunt is supposed to be a media event. And I think you're right there. They primarily want to show and demonstrate to everyone else like what a – what they can do, and the fact that they have this power, if you will. But Anthony, why don't we take a short break here at this point? I want to ask you a little bit more about your websites and stuff like that before we do that. You did a movie recently, a video. It's up on YouTube, available for free, called Disarmed, which is really excellent. It shows some of the statistics as well that we've been talking about before. And summarizes a lot of these points in a very, very good way. So why don't you tell us where people kind of can find your stuff and give out your website so people know where to go to follow you on a more regular basis, Anthony?
Sure. Thanks a lot. Yeah, definitely. So storyleak.com is my main website right now for all the stuff we're talking about. And I've been really passionate about the gun issue because I think it's at the forefront of pretty much all of our rights. Because if we lose the Second Amendment, we lose the Constitution at large. There's no question. It sets a major precedent, and physically they can do what they wish. But yeah, I released a documentary. Mike Adams called it a 31-minute red pill. So hopefully it gets people to understand that gun control is not effective and the reality of the Second Amendment, even if you don't like guns. I mean, I'm not sitting here some redneck that loves guns. I am from the city. And till recently, I never even had a gun or shot a gun. So definitely, I'm looking at this from an intellectual perspective. But you can go to storyleak.com and just click on the YouTube or look up Disarmed in the search bar, or disarmedfilm.com redirects to the YouTube video, and it's all 100% free. It's completely full on YouTube, 100% free. So check that out and share it with those who still believe in gun control.
Very good. Storyleak.com, the main website. We'll have that linked up from ours, of course. We'll take a short break here at this point. Stay with us, Anthony. We'll be right back with much more.
There's a saying, old says that love is blind. Still we're often told, seek and ye shall find. So I'm going to seek a certain lad I've had in mind. Looking everywhere, haven't found him yet. He's a big affair, I cannot forget. Only man I ever think of with regret. I'd like to add his initial to my monogram. Shepherd for this lost lamb. There's a somebody I'm longing to see. I hope that he turns out to be someone.
Continue with more in just a few for all members. And if you wish to continue to listen, you can subscribe at redicemembers.com, your archive to the other side. And in the second hour, we'll discuss Angelina Jolie's preventative double mastectomy. It's highly likely that this is all part of a major push into getting people to think that genes are everything and cutting off parts. Self-mutilation is the way to go. Anthony explains how the transhumanistic view of genetically manipulating humanity is the ultimate physical and spiritual enslavement. He describes what could be Stalinism 2.0 with the robot-like humans in the future. We end the hour on Adam Kokesh and what could go very wrong if the armed march on Washington indeed happens. Learn more at redicemembers.com. Next program we do is with Ramiel Nagel on how to cure tooth decay, but more right now with Anthony coming up. Talk to you on the other side.